The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
Third v first, second v sixth, and seventh v eighth. Plenty of tantalising games in round 12 as we get into the second half of the 2016 AFL season. And the best preview of that weekend is coming up right now in the Thursday Match Committee in the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. G'day everyone, I'm Ben Waterworth, and after a one-week hiatus, the team is back, the regular team is back. Firstly, let's welcome Chief GWS and Melbourne Storm correspondent and aspiring West Coast number one ticket holder, Drew Jones. Hello, DJ.
Hello, Ben. Some people have listened to the podcast. They would like an upgrade on my introduction.
What's that? What like the upgrade to?
I'm not sure what would be, but okay. I'm just not sure about this, the GWS insider.
Okay.
That's Rory Campbell.
I'll work on it. And good afternoon to Rory Campbell if he's listening as well. Let's welcome this man back to the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker, of course, foxfooty.com.au journal and aspiring Melbourne number one ticket holder, coach of the Melbourne Grammar First 11 cricket side as well, Tommy Morris.
Thank you, Benny. No need for an upgrade there. I'm very happy with that assessment.
We'll leave it at that.
An all-round good bloke.
Yeah, all-round good bloke as well. Let's move on to, I reckon, well, maybe game of the round, particularly from a ladder position, but the Swans and Giants might have something to say about that. But it's the Cats taking on North Melbourne on Saturday night. Two great games on Saturday night. We'll get to that second one a little bit later on in the program. But it's an interesting game at Etihad Stadium. North has won its past three against the Cats. But DJ, big opportunity here for the Cats to knock over a really big opponent.
Yeah, really gritty performance from Geelong last week. Got back to that contested ball, that clearance style that they've had over the last few weeks. Obviously, a big blow to lose Tom Hawkins, and
huge.
I'm sure we'll get to that in due course. North Melbourne, it was a stroll on the park against Richmond and Tassie. They play that ground so well, and Richmond clearly went up for the contest and also had some serious issues with injury. So Geelong probably had the better preparation for what should be a really tough clash, but I like North Melbourne's contested style in any game.
The Tom Hawkins out is massive, isn't it? And I just actually saw in the sheet that he's out. We knew he was out, but I forgot for a second. I tipped Geelong, and I've actually changed my tip to North Melbourne just purely based on that. I think it's that bigger out. The other one is Mad Jack Dorr and Todd Goldstein. Can they both fit in the same team? And Brad Scott suggested yes, but past selection would suggest no.
I think I would like to see Mad Jack in the team with Todd Goldstein. I'd also like to see a little bit more of him as the number one man, just to see how he goes. But at the moment, you just can't fit the two of them in there because Goldstein is just a workhorse rucking as the number one and rucking solo, I think, DJ.
Yeah, and Brad Scott's always said he thrives off that high workload. And in the past, when they tried him with Hamish McIntosh and another, Dan Curry or whoever it may have been, Goldstein seems to drop off when he has a second guy in there. So he's at his best when he's doing sort of 90% of the work. I don't think they can have Brown, Waite, Petrie, Dorr and Goldstein in the same team. So if Magic Dorr wants to hold down a regular place, it's going to have to be as a forward ruck. Brad Scott said yesterday, this knee injury it's not going to be one that's ongoing. He just needs to get it right and then he'll be fine, which is great news for Goldstein and for North, but it means that he won't be risked this week if he's not right to go.
Yeah, and they don't need Dorr as well. That's exactly what you're saying. Even though it could stretch Geelong's back line, it looks as if it's going to be stretched anyway with those talls you just mentioned. And their back line has been a changing face in recent weeks, hasn't it, Benny?
It has, and it's a beautiful segue, Tommy, as well, because after the game last week, after Geelong's victory over GWS, David King interviewed Joel Selwood. And when King asked, how are the old stages across halfback going? Well, we actually praised the old stages across halfback, and I think the skipper took a bit of exception to that. The quote was, last week they were too old, this week they were all right again. Make up your mind to words of that extent. Without looking at the numbers, how do you think the old stages are going, DJ? So that we're talking about Harry Taylor, Tommy Lonergan, Andrew Mackey, Enright, Bartell to a certain extent, playing a fair bit down in defence, and Lachie Henderson, not an old stager, 26, but he's a newbie into that defensive unit.
I think Harry Taylor has been one of the best key defenders in the AFL for the last 5 or 6 years. Enright's probably been the best back pocket in the last decade. The only one out of that group who I feel like has regressed noticeably is Andrew Mackey. I love Andrew Mackey, and I think he's been a really good player. He almost is the modern rebounder. He intercept marker. He was doing that 10 years ago. But I noticed against West Coast, and in that 10-minute period when West Coast dominated and the ball was coming in, Nat Nui clearances, he struggled and his defending wasn't good. and he was caught out a few times with West Coast's taller and mobile forwards.
And he is playing that more defensive role now, so he's not getting as much of the ball as he was. But Corey Enright's the one I'd like to discuss a little bit, because it seemed unfeasible a year ago that he'd be playing on in 2017, let alone 2016. But there must be a chance now that he will go on next year.
He's 34 years old and he's averaging 23 disposals a game, career high 7 intercept possessions per game, which is pretty unreal. And I suppose he's just fitting into that back line ever so well. Do you think maybe he can go around again, DJ, or do we probably pass judgment until probably a couple of months' time?
He can definitely go around again. Why would you stop? And all these veterans that are going around in the AFL right now, they're all playing well. Why cut your career short? If you're still playing good footy, your body's still good and you're mentally still engaged and you're ready to go through another pre-season, then why would you give it away? He's got so much to offer. He's won premierships, best and fairest, all Australian. He's done it all. And while Geelong is still trying to develop those medium-sized defenders, the Smeds, the Bews that haven't come on, Ruggles, they're trying, why? There's no reason to get rid of Enright while they're still trying to develop guys for that position.
He could well be in the top five of Geelong's best and fairest at the moment. He's having that consistent a year. Just a couple of individuals. I think you're right about Enright, no doubt. Bartell having career-high intercept possession a year at the moment, and probably averaging his most contested possession since his Brownlow year in 2007, which I think is a huge plus for the Cats. Have you seen Lockie Henderson's start to his career, Tommy? Because there's been lots of talk, obviously, about Dangerfield and even more about Zach Smith in recent weeks, particularly after he had such a wonderful game against Shane Mumford on the weekend. But Henderson, in the last month, has really settled into that back line and has developed into a genuine intercept marker, I think.
Well, I think he's everything Geelong hoped he would become, isn't he? His career-high intercept, disposal, efficiency is excellent, 7 marks a game, so he is getting his hands on the footy as well. I think Brad Scott would be delighted with Lockie Henderson the way he's going. And he really does give them that central spine dominance that they need to be a good team. They've got Hawkins at one end, obviously. They've got a good ruck division, but Henderson centre-half back is extremely important for them, and he's also giving them that little bit of drive as well, which is just that extra bit of the game that potentially he probably didn't have at Carlton when he was playing in defence.
Well, he potentially hasn't reached his ceiling yet, because no. I think Geelong, out of the three clubs that he's been at, is probably the most professional. There's probably a regime that maybe he's not used to. I mean, I'm not going to pass judgment about previous Carlton teams and management there and Brisbane as well, but I think this is the most professional outfit he's played for. He's 26, so he's still got plenty of time to go in his career, so he could get even better.
He could become a 2- or 3-time All-Australian, a best and fairest. He's that sort of player at his absolute best. He feels that the sky's the limit, I agree.
You can measure them all individually, but in the end it does come down to team defence, and the Cats are... The champion data use a measurement called ball equity, so ball movement out of defence. So it's basically the measurement of how well a team transitions the ball from when they win possession towards a shot on goal. And they're currently number 2 out of defence at the moment, so that is quite good. And they're also number 4 for scores against when the opposition goes inside forward 50. So they're going quite well, the Cats, but it's a huge test against the Kangaroos on Saturday night.
Just one point I wanted to make about the Roos. They've been really good against Geelong in recent years in big games as well. And I really think that makes a difference. And I hark back to almost 15 years ago when West Coast would play Brisbane. And Brisbane was so good, but there was just a belief in that West Coast side that they could win, even though the Lions were at the top of the ladder. And they did it time and time again. I think the Kangaroos have that belief against Geelong. And I've been really impressed with Andrew Swallow in the last probably 5 weeks.
Unreal last week.
I mean, he's had a great year, but... You know, he is such a selfless player. He stands on someone at stoppages. He lays tackles, blocks, handballs. Like, his possessions, his quality of game in terms of aesthetically is the last thing that he cares about. All he's trying to do is help his team.
It's going to be a fantastic battle between the two sides, but they will be missing the Cats' Tom Hawkins, who I remember in that 2014 semi-final kicked 5 goals, had 13 marks. Unreal. The Kangaroos didn't have a match-up for him that night. So a bit of a letter for the Roos. Let's move on to Sydney v the GWS Giants. The biggest battle of the bridge yet. This will be a Sunday afternoon game. Before we get into it, Tommy, you're just doing a little bit of research into Sunday twilight game, so the 4:40 time slot. This would probably be, so far, the biggest game in this time slot, a slot that probably hasn't seen the best teams featured in it so far this year.
It is the time slot of death. There's no other way to put it. There's been thrashings all year, and we've done a bit of maths, and there'll be something on foxfooty.com.au this week about this, that the average margin in these games exceeds 8 goals. So it really is a thrashing. There's been some 100-point thrashings as well, but there's been nothing below 30 points. So there's been no close games. Watching it has been a bore in a lot of ways. I know there's West Coast and Adelaide defeating St Kilda by big margins, but there's been others as well. But this shapes as an absolute beauty. Sydney versus GWS, Sunday twilight. This will be well worth it, and this will buck the trend.
I'm looking forward to the battle between Phil Davis and Buddy Franklin, Deej, which has been a pretty fascinating battle in recent years. And I think what makes it so great and why it's so highly anticipated is that both guys are heading in arguably career-best form.
Well, you make an argument for Phil Davis to be in the All-Australian team. That's how well he's playing. And he's more than adequate rebounder as well. And if you played him as the third man in, he could be one of the best in the league without an opponent. But he's just so good one-on-one, you have to... And clearly, they have to play him on basically the opposition's best forward. We talk about Buddy every week on this pod, and I can't wait to see those two go head to head. Spotless Stadium has been a very hard place to travel and hard for key forwards traditionally. So, I mean, I just can't wait for that battle. And last week, only two goals between Patton, Cameron, Johnson, and Lobb.
Yeah,
not a lot doing in the forward line at the moment. They got three goals from Lockie Whitfield, I think three from Toby Green, who's in great form. If they can get their key forwards up and going, that's a key for them. They're also negative 28 inside 50s and negative 30 contested balls. So they were let down in those areas against Geelong. We're still in the game if they can tighten up those areas again, and clearly both really important facets against Sydney.
2 weeks ago, we spoke about the Giants having a really tough next month. We're 2 weeks into that, and they've lost two on the trot, and they need to pinch one of these games, don't they? They can't continue to drop games against good teams. Sydney, you feel as if you're a little bit vulnerable, especially after last week's match. They're a good team. They've got some great players, but the Giants, they're too good to lose three in a row, surely, aren't they? At their best, their forwards can't stay down for that long. Those names you mentioned, they're all star players of the AFL. If not now, they will be in the future. I just can't see GWS at least not giving this one a good crack.
Is Ted Richards coming back in, or is he another week?
Doubt it. I think he might be another week.
That leaves them pretty shorthanded down back. Heath Grundy is in amazing form. A guy that maybe I thought might have been sort of on the downward slide a little.
Dane Rampey as well. Excellent. Nick Smith's doing his job. Their back line's solid, isn't it? But without Richards, they might be left a little bit short.
Yeah, right. Harry Marsh has come in and done a good job in his first two games. But I think he's my height. He's not a tall defender.
Nothing wrong with that, Dave.
No, he's a medium defender. He was playing as a tall midfielder in their near full side at times. So they're going to be stretched down back for sure.
They're contested ball animals, both of these sides. They're ranked number 2 and 4, the Swans 2, GWS 4 for contested ball differential. And Kennedy, Hanbury, Parker against Ward, Canelio and Shields. Shields had, despite GWS losing, Shields had two pretty unreal past couple of games. So watch out for that. That is going to be fantastic. Just quickly before we leave this game, Jared McVeigh penned a really interesting column, DJ, for the Daily Telegraph on Wednesday, talking about his memories of going to the SCG and being able to pick any seat you want. Now that's not the case. And when he goes out to school footy clinics now, kids know how to kick, kids know how to handball, which probably would have been different 20 years ago when he was growing up. Is that the sense, I know you've only just recently relocated to Melbourne, but was that the sense that you were getting during your time there in Sydney, that footy's growing in popularity and people understand the game a little bit more?
If I'm being really honest, not necessarily.
Yeah, okay.
But I think there are certain pockets within Sydney that really love their footy, and there are certain parts of Sydney that have no interest in it and like complain when I would try to get the TV changed in the pub. It's still it's still very much a work in progress, and that's fine. It's not a traditional AFL market, but this is, you know, when they chose to bring in GWS, this was to educate 2 million people in Greater Western Sydney. Mm. And they only have to, theoretically, they only have to educate 60,000, you know, members or, you know, people that have come to games regularly, and they've done a job. And it's gonna happen. But this is a 50-year project for this to happen. Where kids, they're going out to schools, their kids are learning about the game, they grow up with it. Not the 40-year-old guys in the pub who are yelling at me for trying to get the TV changed. Yeah, they're a lost cause. But yeah, it's growing, but it's not going to happen overnight. And like I say, I mean, like the suburb of Paddington, you know, one of the older suburbs in Sydney, loves its footy. The two AFL pubs are in Paddington. Yeah. So even though that's rugby league heartland. So there are pockets around.
It's about the kids of the future. It's about the kids born today, tomorrow, next week, isn't it? Because they're the people that will grow up not knowing any different for a club being in GWS and a club being at the SCG.
Well, I'm looking forward to the clash, no doubt. And it's going to be a big travel for the Swans to go over to Western Sydney. It's certainly an hour and a half in traffic for the Swans to make their way out towards the Homebush area. Deej, I've been looking forward to this one. It's the Eagles taking on the Crows. And Ben Dixon is publishing a column tonight for League Teams as part of our Don't Argue series. And he is certainly not convinced. He was very strong, actually, about the Eagles not being a premiership contender. Direct quote here. Closer inspection shows that they've had an incredibly soft draw that's helped further by football's biggest home ground advantage. He goes on to say that their game style doesn't stack up against the best sides because when teams deny them time and space, they're not allowed to switch the ball. The quote is, keep them skinny and they score skinny. Now, here's your right of reply. With the Eagles sitting in seventh position on the ladder, coming up a huge game against the Crows on Saturday night.
I couldn't disagree with Ben with Ben about the back half. I think that teams have clearly worked out West Coast game style and are really putting things in place to try and stop their rebound and their switch and their ball movement, because all the West Coast really need to do is get it quickly into their forward line. That's so talented, and teams have been able to stop them doing it. Western Bulldogs did it really well. Our entries during that game, particularly second and third quarter, were terrible. My right of reply at the start is something that, coincidentally, I had looked into yesterday and I spoke to you about it.
Yes.
So I've spoke to five esteemed colleagues around Fox Footy.
Research if the podcast.
Yeah, that's right. So
well done.
I disagree with the soft draw. So I reversed West Coast fixture and hypothetically asked five people whether they win or lose. So to explain, instead of West Coast playing Brisbane at home, West Coast played Brisbane at the Yabba. Instead of playing Sydney at the SCG, they played Sydney at home. David King had West Coast 11-0.
Really?
Jake Nile had 9-2, and then the rest had 10-1, except Maxi, who had 8-3.
Yeah, okay. But it's still convincing one way, though, isn't it?
So basically, West Coast have played the top sides away, and they've played teams that they would beat either home or away at home. And that was the reverse last year. So West Coast played a lot of good teams at home and won, and then they had their away games generally against mid or lower table team. Is that right? Yeah.
No, yeah. It's well explained. So it's not easy, but you've done well.
So, and King is really strong on this, and I had a good chat with him yesterday about it. So when top eight teams play each other away from home, it's 2-14. So the two away wins were Geelong against Adelaide in Adelaide, and then I think Giants might have won one or something like that. I can't remember exactly, but it's 2-16. So basically, if you're a top eight team, you don't lose at home.
When people talk about the biggest home ground advantage, as Ben Dixon has in this article for League Teams Don't Argue, surely it's offset by a really difficult road trip away. If you ask West Coast what would they prefer, they would love to be in a central heartland where they're travelling an hour or two max. So I don't really agree with it's the biggest home ground advantage, because it's offset by the other way around, isn't it? And Fremantle aren't winning games at home, so you still have to win these matches.
You do. Well, it's going to be a fascinating contest on Saturday night. I think we talked about it early in the week, Drew, about the contestable issue for the Eagles last week. They got thumped by the Bulldogs, minus 39. And as you pointed out, take away Pritis, who had 20 himself, that's minus 59 that the Dogs would have won by in the end. I'm more interested about their lack of uncontested ball this year. They're only breaking even, only averaging two more uncontested possessions a game last year, which was ranked 10th in the competition. They're now conceding 22 to their opposition this year, which is ranked 16th in the comp. Contested ball pretty similar overall, but I'm just fascinated by the lack of uncontested ball. Are they simply just not getting their hands on the footy as much? Are they not allowed to chip the ball around as much as maybe what they would have liked to? It's just a fascinating number that I sort of can't get my head around at the moment.
Without having put much thought into this, in fact, no thought whatsoever, the things that jump out to me would be Jack Redden in.
Yep.
To our midfield, which is an inside guy.
Yep.
Matt Rosa out, who is a purely outside player. Chris Marston had an interrupted start and has been a little bit down. He's played probably two good games this year. He is an outside player, so he's been down. And then you insert Lewis Jetta, hoping that he's going to, you know, he could add a plus 15 uncontested possession rate to our team. Mm. And, well, he's not even in the best 22 at the moment. So there's a couple of guys that have gone out, a couple that have come in. I wonder if Adam Simpson felt that he needed to address the contested ball situation, and perhaps that has just taken away a little bit from the uncontested side.
And in the end, your game derives from how you are at the contest inside. Two best forward lines going up against each other, I reckon, in the competition at the moment, Tommy. This is Tex Jenkins, Betts, Lynch and Cameron versus Kennedy, Lacroix, Darling, Hill and Cripps to a slightly lesser extent. But are we seeing the All-Australian full forward against the All-Australian fullback? Maybe saying that Buddy is named centre-half forward in the All-Australian side. Is this full forward v fullback in the All-Australian side?
Well, I assume you're referring to Talia and Kennedy.
I am, sir.
And I tend to agree. I think at the moment they probably are. If you had to pick a team right now, I agree with you. I think probably Buddy goes at centre forward. The way he works up the ground probably favours himself to that position a little bit more. But it promises to be an intriguing matchup. And I can't really see a winner. A lot of the time when you see these amazing matchups, you know, it's unlikely Kennedy's going to kick 7. It's unlikely he's going to kick 0. He might get his 2 or 3, but really it's about how he plays his role within the greater setup of his team. And same with Adelaide's forward line with Eddie Betts and Walker and co down forward.
Yeah, well, last week against the Western Bulldogs was the first time this season that Kennedy has neither contributed around the ground or kicked goals. And so for him, that was an anomaly. And he's a pretty proud guy. I mean, he's laid back, but he takes a lot of pride in his footy. So I would expect him to bounce back pretty strongly. Not an easy task against Talia. And I think the team defence of Adelaide has generally been pretty good
really
this year. Yeah, I mean, just looking at Adelaide's forward line on paper, gee, it's in form right now, isn't it? Over his foot issues.
Yep.
And I've delisted him from two of my fantasy teams, which I'm really paying for now. Betts, as we know, is fantastic. But Jenkins is the one. I mean, if you let him get over the back, there's no defender that can go with him because he's so athletic, he's so quick. I don't actually think West Coast have someone who's that well suited to him, to be honest. And you couldn't really bring in Mitch Brown. He's not quick enough. I actually think someone like a Brad Shepherd might be an option.
He's played above his height in the past,
yeah,
hasn't he?
And I think athletically he could probably go with Jenkins. But if he gets isolated one-on-one and you're kicking along to him in like he's going to out-muscle Shepherd every time. So it's an interesting balance they'll have to find.
Yeah, Jenkins isn't a huge sort of one-on-one mark winner, but he does get out the back. He's a smart player. I like that Shepherd v Jenkins matchup. We'll see how that plays out in the field on Saturday night. Let's move on to the other Adelaide team, Port Adelaide taking on the Western Bulldogs on Saturday, which will be very interesting. I think we'll get an idea of where Port Adelaide really sits in the pecking order. They're ninth, but I still feel like there's a difference between Port Adelaide and Adelaide in eighth and ninth at the moment. And the stoppages battle will be fascinating for me, Tommy, because we've got teams with non-dominant ruckmen. As good as Campbell and Ruffhead have been as a combination, they're not dominant ruckmen. The Dogs are 16th for hit-out differential, but remarkably they're first for clearances, which I think is just fantastic, and their ability to hunt in packs. Whereas Port have rejuvenated itself with no Matthew Lobie since round 6, and of course no Paddy Ryder for the whole season. They've lost the hit-outs, they've broken even in clearances, but their ability to score from clearances has been fantastic. So the stoppage battle between these two sides, who are very good at reading opposition ruckman traditionally, will be fascinating.
Well, it might be a nil-all draw in the ruck. No ruckman might go up and it might just fall to the ground. It's incredible the way, and you're right, it is amazing and remarkable the way that the Bulldogs have managed to be 16th for hitouts, but first for clearances. I mean, it does justify how important Libba and Wallace and these sort of players are. And McRae, who's playing a bit more inside this year. But
Dalhouse again.
Dalhouse as well. But Port Adelaide have done a very similar thing the last few weeks, and it's worked. And it's quite amazing the way it has worked with Trent Grove in the ruck, who is not a ruckman. He was a best and fairest defender in 2011, joint best and fairest winner back then. They were weak, but he's turned into the ruck, and he's literally just a pawn for Ken Hinckley. He's just standing there hoping for the best. 6 hitouts last week against Collingwood, and yet they won all the key statistics in terms of clearances and contested ball. It's amazing the way it's worked, and it probably does undervalue the role of a good ruckman like Todd Goldstein, potentially.
What about Marcus Bontempelli, Drew? You would have seen him firsthand last week. He's been back in the midfield. He played a little bit more in the forward line across the first bit of the season, but he's averaged 29 disposals, 16 contested ball, 120 ranking points in the last 5 weeks. Mark McClure made the observation last night on 360 that he saw Bontempelli trying to win more outside ball, but he's back doing what he does best, and it's thrilling to watch.
Yeah, he's definitely one of my favourite players to watch in the competition. He's also a nice bloke and he's got it all going for him, Bont. I remember, I reckon it was the first 15 seconds of their season, he kicked a goal right out of the middle against Freo, and
yes,
I thought, this is the year of Bont. but obviously they had to swing him forward a little bit. I would have thought, I mean, he's a contested ball beast, so if he was looking too much for outside ball, I reckon that might have been some instruction from Luke Beveridge, because they do have so many guys who are well suited to that inside mid role. Yeah, I'm loving what he's doing at the moment. He's moved back inside into the centre square. It's been a really good one for the Dogs. Just quickly on the ruck battle, I've seen Tom Campbell twice this week coming out of the Coles on Smith Street. I've wanted to stop him and say hello to him. He's the best ruck stopper in the league.
He is.
No ruckman gets high possessions or high hit outs against him. He gives him a really tough battle. Like, he's a strong guy. I reckon he'll get to a point where he'll come into his own as a tap ruckman as well. This is the first part of his game. But interesting this week because he's taking on no ruckman. So does he start to try to be more expansive with his game, or is this a big win for Port Adelaide in terms of Tom Campbell not being able to do his usual role? Interesting.
He's known Nick Natanui with hit-outs to advantage Tom Campbell. He's a competitor, no doubt. So is Ruffhead, and they're working out very nicely as a combination. So you're right, that will be interesting to see how that stoppage battle goes. Adam Simpson talked about the spread of the Dogs on Monday night on the Couch. Port have been come under criticism in the past for relying too much on their A-graders, Boak, Wines, Wingard, Robbie Gray above all. That it's so important that Port Adelaide get that even spread and that contribution like what they got against the Pies on the weekend.
An even spread is obviously very important, but Travis Boak's had an up and down year. He's been a little bit better the last couple of weeks, but he was criticised earlier than that for being below form. So it's still important that these four guys need to play their role as well. You know, you can't just assume that Travis Boak's going to come out and have 30 because he hasn't been like that this year. Robbie Gray's been excellent. Wines and Wingard play their bit, but an even spread isn't just players 5 to 22, it's players 1 to 22. These four also need to play their role.
St Kilda and Carlton, Tommy, you've been thinking that the Saints have maybe gotten away with a bit of criticism, and it's probably half to do with the Saints actually aren't in the media in general, when it's positive or negative. But are you just a bit concerned about how the Saints are going about their business at the moment?
I'm a little bit concerned because they're losing games, which is fine, but they're losing games by a lot, and it's happening relatively consistently. Now, they're not the first team to go to Subiaco and get belted, as they did 3 weeks ago, 103 points, I think it was. They're not the first team to go to the Adelaide Oval and get belted, as they did on the weekend, but it's happening all too often. It happened at the end of last year, so it's clear they're not learning from whatever mistakes they're making going away from home. And this away form is really hurting them, because what it means is their percentage is down, their confidence is down. And then when you add the injuries, Dempster, Fisher, McCartan, Goddard, all these guys out, potentially Riewoldt, it's just all compounding into one big problem. Now, their rebuild was clear, it was precise, it was transparent a couple of years ago. But whether it's actually bearing the fruit they wanted 3 years down the track, I'm not sure at the moment. I mean, time will tell. Etihad Stadium, they're a better team. Carlton aren't as strong as Adelaide, obviously. But there are issues at St Kilda, and it's nothing to do with culture or the club as potentially it has been in the past. It's purely football and how well they're playing and how good their youngsters are. The jury's still out on that.
I'll just add one thing really quickly on that. I think they've gone about their rebuild slightly differently to, say, Melbourne, who went down the path of creating a game style to ensure they weren't losing by 120 points without the cattle, and now they're changing their game style to suit their list. Have St Kilda picked their game style and tried to play it with the personnel they have, knowing that the personnel will improve and suit that game style later on?
I think that's a great call. I think Alan Richardson has his game style. Sometimes it's hard to dissect exactly what that is, especially when they're getting done by 100 points. But it's certainly a balance. They look to go quick, but they also look to defend well. They went a lot along the boundary last year, very slow. I think they're the slowest moving ball team in the competition last year. This year, they're trying to move the ball quicker, but they're certainly different to Melbourne in that they don't base it on their personnel. That's their philosophy, and whoever comes in the team has to buy into that team-first ethos.
Well, the last time St Kilda played Carlton was on an Anzac Day last year in the New Zealand blockbuster in Wellington there. Patrick Cripps announced himself that day, and the Pelican Riley Beveridge certainly let us know all about that. The Blues have won their past four against the Saints, but if Carlton win, they could be 7-5 at the bye. And I just can't imagine there's a lot of Carlton supporters in this office, Tommy. Imagine the ego on some of them.
Well, I'm not coming to work next week if they win. Simple as that.
Well, you can take sick leave all you want. Let's get into our tips, gentlemen. Starting with Essendon and Hawthorn at Etihad Stadium on Friday night. Tommy, let's start with you.
Well, I think Hawthorn's going to win that. And then I'll go the Dogs over Port Adelaide for the reasons we spoke about. I think they've got better depth of contributors, the Dogs, even though it's at the Adelaide Oval. I'm going Brisbane over Freo at the Gabba. I like Brisbane at the Gabba. They're quite consistent at the Gabba, even though they do lose. They're not too bad there. Collingwood smashed them. But aside from that, I think they've been okay. I'm thinking about the Hawthorn game. Geelong, I think, is going to beat North Melbourne This is the problem. Earlier on the episode, I tipped Geelong, then Hawkins is out. I'm tipping North Melbourne now. West Coast will beat Adelaide, I think, at Subiaco, although I'm not overly confident. I'm going for the Saints over Carlton. Despite what we've just said, they've proven themselves this year, Saints, to rebound from bad losses extremely well. Whether that eventuates in a win or not, I'm not sure, but I think they'll rebound extremely well. I also think Carlton is simply not good enough to be 7-5. That's probably my default position. Richmond will beat Gold Coast. GWS, I'm going for over Sydney.
That'd be a huge win.
Yeah, I love the Giants and I love the way they're going about it. I think Sydney are probably ripe for the taking at this point in the season. Bigger fish to fry for them maybe later on. And Melbourne will defeat Collingwood on a Queen's birthday blockbuster. Russell Robertson kicked 7 goals for a few years ago on this day, and that was one of the best days of my life.
Nothing like the odd obscure sportsman reference there, Tommy. What about you, DJ? Anything different there that stands out from Tommy's tips?
Yeah, I'm going Essendon on Friday night. No.
You are humorous.
Hawthorn will win by 37 goals. Doggies to win, I think, I saw them last week, very good. I think Freo will beat the Lions. I won't tip the Lions again this year. North to beat Geelong, West Coast at home, you know the record, 2-14.
Of course.
Carlton will beat St Kilda.
Carlton.
Richmond, GWS, but that's a real coin for me.
Sure.
And Melbourne to win on Queen's birthday.
Can we just point out that Tom Rockliffe had 48 disposals last week, and we haven't mentioned him in this podcast, and that's a big reason why I think they're going to beat Fremantle. But Sam Landsberger, our friend from the Herald Sun, didn't give him a vote. 0 votes, 48 disposals. I don't care if you're playing a 150 losing team. That's ball poisoning, and you deserve at least one vote. Stay tuned for Brownlow night, because surely the umpires will have noticed him get a little bit of the ball.
Well, yeah, one vote.
Well, Julian De Stoop had John Pyrick in his sights on The Age on Monday, and gee, Tommy Morris has gone after Sam Landsberger on the Thursday podcast. So good afternoon to those gentlemen if they're listening. Remember, you can find out all the latest news by clicking back to foxfooty.com.au and following us on Twitter. We'll be back for more podcasts next week. But thanks to Tommy and DJ, and stay tuned for all the latest footy action on foxfooty.com.au.